We're going to call this March 23rd, 2017 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Later, 6:24 start for a 6 o'clock meeting. Record time tonight. Mark my words. Ms. Beer, please call the roll.
Chairman Noe.
Here.
Chair Randall.
Here.
Chairman Bulova.
Here.
Chair Fassett. Mayor Silverberg. Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Meyer.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder.
Here.
Mayor Rochelle.
Oh,
here. Senator Black.
Here.
Delegate Hugo.
Here.
Delegate Minshew.
Coming.
Ms. Hines.
Here.
Mr. Cole. Mayor Burks.
Here.
Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Ms. Mitchell.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. First item before us is the minutes of the February 9th meeting. 10 out of advance. Any questions, comments? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
What?
No, I was just telling the spirit to note Mr. Mullane for.
We have a motion and a second. Did you get the motion and second?
No. Second.
A motion from Ms. Bulova, second from Ms. Randall. All in. Sure. We'll reverse them. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. 66 and 395 update. Jennifer.
I think it's Susan. I think Ms. Shaw is going to start and then Ms. Mitchell.
Susan, thanks.
Thank you, Chairman Noe and members of the board. Thanks for having us here to brief you on three projects I'm going to cover, 66 outside the Beltway, 66 inside the Beltway, and then our 395 project. So giving you a kind of a high-level briefing on where we're at with all of these projects. So I'll start with 66, just reminding what our scope of work is that we're providing 22.5 miles of express lanes, two lanes in each direction that will span from the Capitol Beltway out to University Boulevard in Gainesville. There'll be three regular or general purpose lanes in each direction outside of those. And we'll also be making safety and operational improvements at key interchanges. Of course, one of the key components of our overall program are transit service and park and ride facilities as well. Some of the park and ride lots will be provided as part of the initial construction. And this project included annual payments by our private partner that will go to support transit service, improved transit service in the corridor. The key business terms, we set these up as we were moving through procurement, and the two you see highlighted in yellow there are ones that were over and above what we had originally anticipated in our when we set up those key business terms. In terms of financing, and you might recall last year when we came and requested, we had a $300 million request in for the 66 and 28 interchange. We also anticipated needing to provide public funding of $300 million for through the state's process. And all of that was approved last summer. But with our bids that we received in the fall, the winning proposal did not need to use any of that funding. And in fact, they are providing a concession fee. And so that's what you see highlighted in yellow there. We still have some role that, we will play in providing all of the approvals, government approvals. But the developer will be responsible for all of the other permitting. And they have also provided a fixed price contract to us, $2.3 billion for the design and construction of the facility. In terms of operation and maintenance, typical to our other express lanes facilities, they'll be doing the operation and maintenance of the facility themselves for the 50-year term. The 50-year term actually began at the time that we signed our comprehensive agreement, which was in December. And then the highlighted area there is normally our what we've done on our other express lanes projects. The department, VDOT, has provided snow and ice removal, but this team has proposed to provide that themselves. And then we will be continuing to maintain and operate the general purpose lanes outside of those express lanes. So we did, as I mentioned, sign the agreement in December of 2016. Express Mobility Partners is the name of our team. They've been going by 66 EMP, but they are led by Cintra and Meridium in terms of their equity investors. And then they have a design-build contract team that is a joint venture between Grovial Agriculman and Allen Myers. As I mentioned, the $2.3 billion construction project. And I would just say this is a new partner to the Northern Virginia region. We've worked for many years with Transurban and their team on our other express lanes. But as part of our due diligence, we did go down and visit in Dallas, Texas, where this team has delivered similar, very large public-private projects, as well as going up to Canada, where they also have projects that has been up and running for about 10 years. And as I mentioned, the $500 million is now going to be available for improvements. This is an estimate of the concession fee that you've heard announced by the governor and the Secretary of Transportation. We won't know the exact amount until we reach financial close, and we are working towards that, but that's been the number that we've had out in the public. And there is a code provision that talks about who decides what you do and what the requirements are in terms of how you can use that funding and how we need to track it from a state standpoint. And then the $300 million gets returned back to go into the SMART scale statewide competition, as well as back to the authority for other projects. One of the features that we had during procurement was we had a process where we had what we call our RFP plans, our proposal plans that the public saw. We had published on our website, and that was back in the summer, and those were the plans that had been out in the public for some time. But during the procurement, in those green blocks, you can see both the two teams that were competing had the opportunity to come to us with confidential alternative technical concepts. So they could look at other ways if they had better ideas of how to deliver the project. And then if we gave them a thumbs up on their ideas, they could actually be incorporated into their bid. And that's where you see that orange arrow from our Team A, the winning bidder. They included those, the ones that were approved, in their technical proposal, and you see some of those listed there, just some of the key features. We looked at over 100 different ATCs during our procurement process when we looked at from both teams. And that option is what is now being asked to be considered in the by the Transportation Planning Board as an out-of-turn amendment as option A. And you'll see that if you happen to sit on that or have representatives sitting on that, it's something that will be considered actually next week. So we are planning to do an out-of-turn amendment for that. And then option B is in the blue box below. As part of our procurement process, the Centro Ferrovial team has the opportunity to look at other ideas, either that were included in the competing team's proposal or other ideas that they've had since they last submitted to us. And so there's some other ideas that you will see, and that is included in an option B. We're planning to run both of those in the model, in the region's model. And then we'll be working towards a June public information meeting where this information could be presented. And then over the summer, we'll continue with our outreach, focusing on getting to a design public hearing in the fall of 2017 and getting us to final plans so that construction can begin later next year. In terms of public outreach, we've been kind of quiet for a while as we get started with our new partner. We've also been, you know, working through some of just that initial startup activity, but we're getting ready to begin reaching out with our technical groups, working with technical staff, working through some of the ideas that have come about and sharing with them. We're also looking to do some elected official outreach. I know we've met with a few of you, but we're continuing to do that. One-on-one briefings with directly affected elected officials, continuing to do that. We've begun outreaching to homeowners associations as they've requested briefings. We have limited information to share right now, but we're working towards expanding that as we move towards these public information meetings in June. And we actually have our tentative dates as June 19th, 21st, and 22nd. So those are the dates that we're targeting. We did, I think June 20th is a board meeting day for both Prince William and Fairfax, so we're trying to avoid those. And we would have them similar, in similar areas of the region like we've done before, three different areas along the corridor. And that would allow us to then move into construction kickoff later this year. We do have a construction communications program that we're working on. And then there will, you know, as we move forward to actually implementation, you'll see more of the marketing and information campaigns as we move towards tolling. In terms of our key milestones, you see there we've got our June public information meetings. We're working towards financial close in July of 2017. And so we're on track to do that. We're coordinating now with, of course, the Tiffany office and others. They're working to get their financial package all pulled together. And then we would have right-of-way acquisition would not start until after our design public hearing. We do have some interim milestone dates that we've placed into the contract, and so you see those there. One of the key ones that we had was removing the four traffic signals on Route 28 by February 2020, and that's committed to in the contract, and there are liquidated damages associated with if they don't meet those dates. And then tolling would begin in July of 2022. So I'm now going to switch gears and move to our Inside the Beltway map. I'm assuming I'm just going to blast through this.
Okay.
Inside the Beltway is a very different type of project. Some key differences where this is a, we have two major efforts underway here. And so one is our tolling program. And that, you can see our construction, we're actually underway out there. We're starting to shift with our messaging and calling this our 66 Commuter Express. So that's our new name that we're planning to push out as we work to educate people about the system. It is just tolling during weekday periods in the peak directions during peak hours, and you see all of that there. We are planning to begin with HOV2 in 2017, and then that would transition to HOV3 in conjunction with when we open the toll lanes on 66 outside the Beltway. And that would be during the tolling periods, everybody would need to have their Easy Pass or Easy Pass Flex if they're HOV mounted in the vehicle. And then we also, along with this project, we have a very key component is our multimodal program that is being funded by the toll revenue. In terms of our construction activities, you might have seen us out there. If you drive the corridor, you'll see there's a picture of a recently placed gantry that's going up. These have all been installed in the corridor, and then we're also working on the signage that goes along with the system and ground-mounted sign foundations in the corridor. We still have some work to do to get all the equipment hung, so those are some of the next steps that you'll be seeing out there. So our other major effort is our eastbound widening project, and this is widening 4 miles of I-66 eastbound only from 2 to 3 lanes. Some of the key features of that project is it does include the potential for about a little over 11,000 linear feet of noise walls along that corridor. Some of that is replacing old walls that are in much need of replacement, and some of it is filling in some gaps where previously noise walls were not constructed, and now they could be if people, communities choose that they want to have a sound wall. We also have a new grade-separated crossing of the WNOD Trail at Route 29 in Lee Highway, and I know next week we have a design charrette on that bridge trying to work with the communities and the localities there to come up with a design that's the least impactful and still improves the safety of that crossing. We're also looking at some off-ramp improvements at Washington Boulevard and Glebe Road, and this will help to improve access to the East Falls Church metro station there. Tolling is planned to continue through the construction. In terms of public outreach, we are working to develop an advertising campaign to push out through radio, newspaper. We're trying to use all of the different media sources that we have to help educate people about this change that's coming in the corridor. We've also done a number of community outreach, and then we're working on our customer website. In terms of the widening, as I mentioned, we do have some workshops. We have two planned. One is April 5th. I think the other, we haven't quite settled on a date yet to work on that, the head bridge that will go up there. In terms of key milestones, our environmental assessment is completed. We're just wrapping that up this week. In terms of getting our final federal approvals, we also are planning to have a design build contract for that, and we're planning to issue our RFP here in the next several weeks. The initial multimodal projects, these were the ones that MDTC is managing in terms of the overall program. And those, some of those have actually started, but in terms of the transit, and I think Jennifer will touch on that a little bit more. We are looking to begin tolling in later this year. I think earlier we were planning for more of a mid-2017, and now we're looking at more towards the end of 2017. This is going to provide us a little more opportunity for testing this very unique system. You know, this is tolling only during certain time periods. It's very different than some of our other dynamically tolled systems in that you need to make your decision in many places, you know, before you get to the road. So we're working on mobile apps to help people make those choices where they need to make them. And then opening the widening construction would begin in the spring 2018, and then the new eastbound lane would open in late 2020. So now I'm moving to 395 express lanes. This is a corridor that we've been talking about for a while, but we did, in terms of the project scope, we're looking at expanding the existing two-lane reversible HOV lanes to three managed hot lanes, similar to what we've done in the southern parts of that corridor. And the new express lanes will run all the way from where they end today at Turkey Cock Ramp all the way to the DC line. We'll be providing improved connections at the 8th Street interchange there at the Pentagon, and, of course, installing signage, toll systems, and an active traffic management system in those areas. This corridor also has the opportunity for sound walls, about 8 miles of sound walls in this corridor. And it's mainly not because adding this one lane and making this change is increasing the noise so much as the 395 corridor, when it was originally built, we didn't really have a noise policy in place. And so those communities have been impacted for many years. And so now they will have the opportunity to decide whether they want to have sound walls constructed in their community. Another key feature of this overall financing on this project is that the deal that we've just signed here in February includes providing an annual transit payment that begins at $15 million and is escalated annually throughout the life of the term. So that's a significant improvement in terms of making sure that we're doing our best to move more people in the corridor, which is a focus of this project. I wanted to just show you this slide because this is one of the key areas, not to get into a lot of the detail, but what you see here is that orange blobby thing is on the Pentagon parking lot. And it is providing, it shows a bus loop as well as a loop there for carpooling access But I wanted you to be aware of some of the significant changes that are happening at that location. And it is key to us being able to improve transit service in the area, as well as the changes that we're making at East Street. And I would also say we've worked very hard to coordinate with the Pentagon. It's a big undertaking to coordinate with them and have all this transit that's accessing their facility and still meet all of their safety and other requirements that they have. But we're moving forward and really pleased with the progress that we've been making there. In terms of public outreach, here we're in partnership, and you see the 395 Express Lanes logo there. We did sign the Second Amendment to the Comprehensive Agreement, and so we're really doing this outreach jointly with our transurban partners as we move into the corridor. So we are looking to, over the next several months, as we move into more full construction, briefings to elected officials and localities. We will have coordination with key stakeholder groups and begin to talk about what the changes are coming in the corridor. And we'll use those same types of approaches in terms of using all the different things that we have to be able to reach out to people. In terms of the activity in the corridor, all of this construction is really occurring right in the middle of the 395 lanes. And so a lot of the communication is about what's happening in those existing HOV lanes. We've already started doing some night lane closures of those lanes so that the design build team that the transurban people have contracted with, which is lane construction, can get out there and do some testing of the pavement, do some surveying, some early work activities, which is the phase that we're in right now. Here you just see some of our key milestones. We've completed our environmental assessment. We just signed the comprehensive agreement, and we're in that early work phase, as I mentioned, which should extend through June 2017. And then we plan on reaching financial close by June, and then construction would begin shortly after that. Project completion here is 2020. We actually have toll day one is September 2019, and that is the date that the first annual toll payment would be available, is on that September 2019 date.
Transit.
Yes, the first transit payment is due on toll day one.
Is that supposed to be spring of 18? Construction beginning?
No, we are planning to begin, well, I should maybe say summer 2017. That's a good...
Most of June is in the spring.
Yes. Yes. Well...
Okay.
I presume the bulldozers will be in the parking lot of the attorney's office while you're at financial close.
Well, they're very anxious to get started, so...
Secretary's going to sign a document and the asphalt will start pouring.
All right. I don't know. Okay. Can you all hear me from here? I'm going to keep mine very short. I'm just adding a few more slides to talk a little bit about the transit and multimodal components for each of the studies that Susan has gone over. The first one is I-66 outside the Beltway, and as Susan mentioned, the concession payment does provide about $800 million in present value for transit services over the next 50 years, and that for in the I-66 corridor. And that includes funds that can be used for both annual or for capital and operating expenses. The bus service that we will be running is primarily point-to-point commuter-based service. That will be serving the park and ride lots and then major activity centers in D.C., Arlington, Tysons, and the Dulles Airport area. Let's see. This map shows the locations of those park and ride lots. where you see the P's at the Gainesville, Manassas, and Fairfax Center is where we'll be serving with this point-to-point bus service, and then later also the Haymarket Park and Ride, which is being developed separately. On 66 outside the Beltway, so essentially the bus service will be utilizing the new express lanes to provide very predictable travel times. They're going to be operated by Fairfax Connector and PRTC, so we're not using the private concessionaire to actually operate the services. We're still in discussions about how that can be amended in a very cohesive way as a 66 express service, but still operated by the two transit systems. But really the goal of the bus service as well is being able to optimize these services over time as conditions evolve over the next 50 years, as activity centers evolve and develop and demand patterns change, that we can be flexible and adapt those bus services accordingly. So these bus services, the service will begin in 2022. By 2025, we'll have 13 new or expanded routes with up to 10,000 forecasted daily riders. And then by 2040, we will be increasing that up to 20 new or expanded routes with ridership of about 13,400. On 66 inside the Beltway, as Susan mentioned before, that NVTC is actually programming the transit projects for this. CTB is approving those and be able to be allocating toll revenues to fund both new transit and travel choices. This includes some new, I think, three new bus routes and expanded bus routes from Loudoun County, Fairfax, and also a number of TDM programs throughout the corridor. In sum, all of the projects themselves will carry about 5,000 people through the corridor every day, and it connects 20 activity centers for all the transit services. Right now, NVTC has been working with all of the grantees on these agreements, and I understand that all the agreements are underway, and we expect all the projects to be running and operational by toll day one. I should note, this was for the first $10 million upfront payment for transit payments, so that these services would be ready on toll day one, but there will be recurring revenues as well. On I-95 and the 395 express lanes, as Susan mentioned before, there is an annual transit payment of $15 million with escalation that will be used for transit. DRPT has been working on a transit TDM study with VDOT and all of our transit partners in the area. We've come up with a very comprehensive list of potential transit enhancement and TDM measures. And all of those projects have been scored according to a number of criteria that were developed with all the partners. I think we had a total of over $6 billion in projected needs. One of the things that we're going to be doing over the next several months, we're validating some of the data that we have in that study and also winnowing that list down to just the highest priorities in the corridor with the highest scores, trying to get it to a much more manageable list. After that, we will be working with NVTC and PRTC to develop a process for programming and selecting those projects every year from the annual transit payment so that we can ensure that we're moving the most people through the corridor. And the study itself hasn't been published yet, but we do expect to publish it later this year. And again, this is just a reminder that in all of these corridors, that unlocking congestion has to be a multimodal approach, which is really the approach we've taken on all three of these projects. Transit as a very big part of the solution, utilizing toll revenues. So if anybody has any questions for me, or I assume for Susan as well.
Any questions? Fantastic.
Okay. As you know, this group, no questions. This could be.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, next item. Who do we have from VRE?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Doug Allen. I'm the CEO for the Virginia Railway Express, and I'm joined with Sonali Sunuji, who's one of our planning managers. And we want to talk to you about the Manassas Park parking garage expansion, parking expansion at Manassas Park. As most of you know, VRE operates, obviously, commuter rail trains, but we're largely at capacity. We have, our trains are full, a lot of our parking lots are full, and so we began a program to add capacity along our lines. And one of the areas that we're looking at, of course, is at the Manassas Park parking. There's a lot out there that Sonali will talk about, and we wanted to share with you the process that Sonali and the community have been going through to identify options to expand that parking at Manassas Park. And so we're here to present a status report on it and share the information with you and then answer whatever questions you might have.
Thank you. So as you may remember, Manassas Park, we have a surface parking lot at the station there, and it's already overflowing. The lot gets full before the last train leaves the station. So that's the purpose of the project, is to expand the number of parking spaces and meet the current and future needs. This is an META-funded project. We have two grants. One from the FY15-16 program that funds the alternatives analysis and the preliminary design and NEPA phases. And then we also had a grant from the FY17 program for the final design. And we conducted a single procurement so that we can move the project along through all three phases. So we have completed the alternatives analysis phase. We're just finalizing the report. And we have provided a notice to proceed for the preliminary design. And currently we're out there surveying, trying to get base mapping going to get that phase going. So we have two major tasks in the alternatives analysis. One was to try to identify our need, the number of spaces that we would need to build. And we went out and did some field survey to verify that the existing demand was correct based on our historical data and field survey. And also looked at some of the forecasted demand through the modeling that was conducted for the Gainesville Haymarket project, both with the extension and without the extension. And we came up with the need for 510 to 560 spaces, the larger number being without the extension, which is the number that we're going with right now. The other big task was to try to identify a site for the parking spaces, and to do that, we worked with the city to come up with the evaluation criteria, and we had four criteria that we were working with. One was, of course, to be close to the platform so that the passengers can easily walk to the platform. The second one was looking at the ownership of the sites. We looked at several sites in the vicinity of the platform, and the city owned three sites that we looked at. We also looked at privately owned sites, as well as the VRE surface lot, which is on the other side of the railroad. The third one was to support the city centers, the city center vision. The city has guidelines that identify this area as a transit-oriented, higher density development in the future, and we wanted to make sure we support that both in the building form as well as the location of the parking garage. And I'll go into that a little in more detail in the next few slides. And the fourth one was to make sure that the traffic can circulate both to the garage as well as, you know, within the garage. So those were our four evaluation criteria. This is a map of the sites that we studied, and the ones that are shown in red are the private, the publicly owned sites. And then we also looked at the yellow ones, which are privately owned sites. And site number six was added in through the public process. So when we went through the evaluation criteria, we came up with a matrix for the sites that did, you know, better or worse on different criteria, and we were able to make a recommendation for a preferred alternative. And this was the site called the Base site. It's located to the extreme north, to the north of the railroad and to the north of the platform. And it's a city-owned site that we selected. The site selection process and the whole process so far, we went out to the public at a town hall meeting that was conducted on November 1st at City Hall, and we got a pretty good response. We had about 15 or 20 people there, and then we also had some comments at the public hearing during the regular city council meeting, as well as some email comments. Everything was fairly positive and some questions, but generally, you know, we were able to go ahead and the city actually endorsed our preferred alternative on November 15th. And so we're confident that we have a good site and we're moving ahead with design on that site. Just a little bit about the site that was chosen. We're looking at, and this is going to change, you know, or be refined as we get into the next phase, but we're looking at about 185 spaces for a level and 8-level garage building on the site. The site is fairly close to the platform. It's 325 feet from the platform, so it's fairly short walk. And it also does not hinder any of the prime development sites. This is what I was talking about, the criteria about supporting the city center vision, where some of the sites that were right on Manassas Drive would have probably been easier access, better sites, but those are the sites that would probably have more potential for to be developed in the future for other uses. And so we picked a site that may be a little bit out of the way so that the city center could develop as a whole. And also because the access road is fairly long, there's, you know, the circulation is easier at this site. Some of the disbenefits of this site are that it's located on the other side of the platform and further away from Manassas Drive, so that, you know, there's a little bit of a disadvantage there. There's also a 12-inch water line that we'll have to relocate, so that, you know, that's not insurmountable. And so that's where we are on the project, and I'm happy to take questions.
Questions for you? I got one. The site, and actually this may be a question for Mayor Rischel, actually. The site, the Bays site, that's city-owned, it's publicly owned, city-owned?
City-owned, correct.
And this is something that will be thought about much later, but this is, for those of you who know, this is in the city of Manassas Park, but right up against my magisterial district. A lot of these people parking here actually live in my district, not in the city. Do we know how the site was acquired by the city?
You know, I could check into that. I don't know off the top of my head.
The thing I'd be curious to know at some point in time is what were federal dollars, whatever the reason for acquiring were federal dollars used? Because if the answer is no, this, you know, the site, the project is not automatically federalized.
I don't think there are federal dollars. That has never been mentioned.
Yeah, because unless someone asked, it wouldn't have come up probably. But it would be interesting to know because when we federalize these projects, they get much more complicated. And I bet it's not. I mean, because how much money do we ever have to federalize?
There are federal dollars in the platform, but I don't believe they are.
Well, no, that's my point. This is a separate project from the platform. So a different piece of land and funded through a different stream. Whereas the station site, we know from past experience, is a federalized site because when it was first expanded, the city had some trouble with regulating parking there because the federal government said, no, you can put retail parking and residential parking because it's federal. We'll worry about it later. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Have one more announcement on another MBTA project, the Crystal City Station Improvements Project. We started that project as well, and we're having our first set of public meetings next week, and there should be a flyer in your packets about that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
And on that one, the really cool thing is we're looking at creating an ability to walk from downtown Crystal City to National Airport.
Wow.
It's only about how many?
Well, it depends on the option, but one of them is about 750 feet.
It's like a few minute walk.
Like the track is the thing that separates the airport
exactly.
And Crystal City are different planets.
You would walk right from the platform or the VRE platform across a bridge, and you'd end up at the metro station, and it's really incredibly short. So
it's a DW Parkway too. It's not just a taxi.
Well, that and then theoretically that would also then create another, in addition to Union Station, another. No, between VRE and Metro.
Incredible.
Thank you, Jonah. Since we have the worthy Mr. Allen here, allow me to ask an NBTC question in the NBTA setting, and that is, should we assume that the Gainesville-Haymarket extension is off the project planning mode at the present time?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. The operations board and Prince William County in particular spent a lot of due diligence in reviewing all of the analysis that was done. Marty took the lead for the county. The decision that was made by the operations board was to pursue expansion of VRE's capacity at the existing Broad Run complex. The resolution that was passed also speaks to in the future, an extension out to Gainesville could be considered. And I'll let Marty kind of speak to that a little bit more. But what we'll be focused on is expanding capacity so that we can run more trains at the existing Broad Run facility.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I'll just add, I'll come in. I think the vision is we're going to keep the Gainesville-Haymarket. I mean, even though Haymarket in particular, in the context of the study, was not economically feasible, and we ultimately determined that even Gainesville really wasn't economically feasible in the foreseeable future. We're keeping it on our comp plan. Now, as we talk to landowners out there, that may change. Who knows in a future generation. Right now, the challenge that we have is we can't have three termini. When we looked at the question, could we have Fredericksburg, Broad Run, and Gainesville? And today you can't because there's not enough slots. You can't move enough trains in the corridor. But, you know, as we make America great again with $1 trillion of new transportation investment, that's just new.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Well, I mean, like, look, what we're starting to hear is that if a big federal transportation play comes in, projects that use a lot of American steel will be strong projects. Railroad bridges use a lot of steel. So there may be an opportunity in the future to have three termini. So we're going to keep it on the plan. But for now, we've got to achieve the short-range goal of getting more trains on the track. And the only way to do that within the next few years is Broad Run.
It's helpful.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. You know, I very much wanted to see the rail extended to Haymarket. And we did, I think, a very thorough exam to see whether there's any possibility. And it simply is a bridge too far. And I think the most passionate advocates for the program recognized that you just did not have the adequate, you know, ridership to make it practical. And so it's one of those things someday we're going to build it all of steel.
That's right.
Entirely steel all the way into Haymarket, but we couldn't justify it.
I will say, I told my wife last Friday night when I got home, I said, regardless of what the answer had been, getting that decision into the past tense was the best thing that happened to me so far this year. I've learned more about transit capital procurement in the last 3 months than I ever thought I would need to know.
If I could just add, I think that the thorough job that my staff and Christine Hefner in particular was the project manager, what Christine did and the consultants did was only allowed available because we were able to get some funding to help do that from NBTA to help advance that work. So I think it's really worth the upfront effort to really study it. Make sure it's the right investment, and sometimes if it isn't, and Broad Run will be a fine location. We'll make it function extremely well and have the capacity to do it. So, yeah.
Anything else? Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, on to some action items. We do not have a consent agenda, so our first item is the approval of a financial statement audit services contract. Mr. Clark.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, just a question. When is the next meeting supposed to begin?
7:30, so we've got just a few minutes. Let me draw everyone's attention. First of all, let me thank again the staff as well as the Finance Committee. Finance Committee met last in February, took up a number of things, as is indicated in item 10 at the, on the Finance Committee report of that meeting and its minutes. But part of that was the seeking of the Northern Virginia NVTA approval to contract for financial statement audit services with PB Mayors. So in an effort to be quick and short and efficient, I move that the authority approval to acquire financial statement audit services through a rider with the VRE PB Mayors LLP contract and authorize the NVTA Chief Financial Officer to sign related service agreements for fiscal year 2017 through 2021 be approved.
I'll second that motion.
Motion by Mr. Parrish, second by Ms. Bulova. Any discussion?
And if anyone would like further discussion on that, please let me know, and I'll be glad to get into it. But it is in your package.
Are there any questions? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Budget transfer for technology.
Very good. The same thing applies to item number 7, which is, again, covered in our minutes from the February Finance Committee meeting. And it is related to the movement of money from 18 to 17 to accomplish something that this authority has been trying to get done for quite a while. So let me just make the motion. I move authority approval of the FY 2017 transfer of $25,000 from the MBTA operating reserve to expenditure account 320 and an offsetting 2018 transfer of $25,000 from the expenditure account 320 to the MBTA operating reserve. And what that accomplishes is something, again, that we've talked about trying to get accomplished that would help us show what our projects are doing in a far better fashion that will impact our decisions made so far, as well as obviously transactions.
Second.
Motion from Mr. Parrish, second from Ms. Bulova. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item 8 is CMAQ RSVP allocation request for Fairfax County. Do we need to report on this, or should Ms. Bulova make a motion?
Ms. Bulova can make a motion.
Stay sober.
Move
approval. Second from Mr. Black. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Legislative update. Hines.
Thank you. Our legislative liaison is not able to be here because a workman arrived at her home, making it impossible for her to come. So I'm going to turn it over to Monica to do a brief summary, and then I think Ms. Mitchell wants to add just a little bit on follow-on on the bill that one of the bills that was passed.
Right. In the spirit of brevity, I do want to note that the bills that we were opposed were defeated, and that were HB 2121, the Keene bill to add sidewalks to the approved use of the 70% regional revenue. And then there was HB 2120, also by Keene, and the companion SB 929 for Peterson were both defeated, but not without a lot of work in the House. And again, those bills were to, number one, allow the 70% regional revenues to be used for sidewalks. And essentially, we didn't need that bill. We can fund sidewalks with the 70% regional revenues, provided the scores and the sidewalk projects go through the process. Also, there was a bill regarding adding an 18th member, the town, what we refer to as the town bill, adding an 18th member to the authority representing one of the towns with a population of 3,500 or more. And that 18th member would be from a town, and that town member could actually vote, would be a voting member. And so that bill was also defeated. We did have Delegate LaMoney's bill, HB 2137, which essentially states that, and it was amended, and I do want to note that, but no additional analysis of a long-range regional plan is required, because one of the initial versions of this bill was we would have to do initial analysis of transaction. The effective date of this bill is July 1 of 2018. What it requires us to do is a lot of things we're doing anyway, is document how we choose the projects that are selected for funding for the regional revenue fund. So we have to make sure we document if projects are not chosen because DC or Maryland are required to provide funding for those projects, we have to state that as well. So it's really trying to further the documentation process. It also requires that the authority update transaction or your long-range plan every 5 years, and if you do not update it every 5 years, you need to document why you're not updating it every 5 years. But now that we have this funding revenue, I doubt that that would be a problem. And furthermore, we just need to note that the authority must post any communication sent from a member locality noting a change to their comp plan or transportation plan that conflicts with the authority's long-range plan. And again, that's not new. There was a bill that passed a few years ago, I believe it was HB 1915, that requires the locality to notify the authority of any changes to their transportation or land use sections of the comprehensive plan. And now we have to, and now once they notify us, we have to post it and document it to our website. And again, it has a delayed enactment, so it goes into law July 1, 2018.
And so, I want to turn to Ms. Mitchell now because there was an announcement today related to these budget amendments around natural.
Sure, and as many of you are aware, we have passed two versions of the bill, of the Metro Safety Commission bill, both House Bill 2136, which was sponsored by Delegate LaMunyon, and also Senate Bill 2515, sponsored by Senator Barker, with the creation of the Metro Safety Commission. I do expect the governor to sign those. He has till Monday, so it will be between now and Monday that that those get signed, so it could be imminent. But as part of that, there was an enactment clause that directed us, and I'd like to thank Delegate Minchin as well for working very closely with us on this, that asked us to look at both governance, financial, and operational reforms at WMATA, and I'm kind of paraphrasing that right now, in close coordination with NVTC as well. And I know many of you around the table here are members of a subcommittee NVTC has put together to work with us on this. This morning, the governor announced that we are initiating this study and that we'll be working with Maryland and DC on it, and that it's going to be led by Ray LaHood, who's a former USDOT Secretary of Transportation. We're really pleased that he can participate with us. It was important to us that this be that there be buy-in from all the regional partners on this, and also that it have the level of independence and credibility that we feel it's needed to really result in some true changes that need to be enacted. So we'll be starting that study. We're starting it right away. We've got some consultants on board already, and we'll have our final report by November. Stay tuned in terms of additional information about how we'll be engaging many of you in this effort. We're still working out some of those details, but we're really pleased to get this started.
That comes in.
Any questions on
I just want to put on the record that the towns are disappointed that the NVTA continues to object to having the towns having a voting representative.
To Jennifer, is Secretary Hood being brought on board by Maryland, Virginia, and D.C.?
But we're bringing him on as the state. We've said that we're going to fund the study. DRPD is going to fund the study, and we'll engage LaHood. But we really expect that he'll be playing the role of somewhat of a regional facilitator, if you would.
The other two parties are sort of on board.
Yeah, they're actually, the governor did speak with Governor Hogan last night. I think by now he's also spoken with Mayor Bowser, but we've also spoken with her staff. And so they're on board and participating in this as well.
Well,
I'm going to
fill us in.
It's fine. I actually wanted to publicly say what I've said privately a lot of times, and to thank the delegate from Leesburg. You did fantastic work on these bills down at the General Assembly, as did Delegate LaMunyon. I will, my office will be reaching out to you sometime very soon, just so we can sit down and make sure that we have kind of a county, Loudoun response, and also to bring you up some of the meetings that I've had with Mayor Bowser around metro items.
Okay.
Regarding Secretary, former Secretary LaHood, and his being engaged in the process of governance and financing, but mainly governance issues. I did have the opportunity to talk with Secretary Lane this morning, and pointed out that there are a lot of groups looking at different aspects of WMATA. And on the governance issues, you know, the Federal City Council is looking at this. That's headed up by Anthony Williams, former mayor of D.C. It's very D.C.-centric. And then the Board of Trade has also focused and is working on governance issues. And COG, the Council of Governments, is in particular looking at funding, a regional funding mechanism, and I've been involved in that. And TC, there's a subgroup that's working on governance and everything that was in the enactment clause for the state legislation. I think it's a really good thing that Secretary LaHood has been asked to step in, because he's got the kind of gravitas and ability to bring parties together. Mm-hmm. And so bringing the states, the District of Columbia together, the, you know, the different entities that are looking at different things, they, you know, people are going sort of in different directions. And I really applaud the governor for reaching out to Secretary LaHood. I worked with him when we were struggling with the overrun in the cost of phase two of the Silver Line, and the disagreement with the MWA board over should the station be underground or above ground at the airport, and then Loudoun County, you know, starting to maybe reconsider whether or not they wanted to continue to be in the plans. So Secretary LaHood was magnificent in bringing everybody together, and I think, you know, that he can really be helpful in helping us to come together on governance issues, which are complicated, complex, and he understands all of those things. And through the changes in governance or improvements to governance, I think support will flow for increased revenue, which is sorely needed for maintaining into the future a safe metro system. So I think this bodes very well.
And I should note as well is that when the governor spoke with Secretary LaHood, Secretary LaHood made it very clear that he did not want to be involved with this if this was just a one-sided kind of political statement by Virginia that we wanted him to put his name on for the purpose of getting other people to give it credibility. He would only participate if this was a true regional effort, that it was collaborative, and that would be independent. And we said, absolutely, that's the deal. I'm looking very forward to working with him on this. I think it'll be great.
I think all these studies are great, but I think it's important to remember that we have a statutorily authorized approach that involves the governor and NBTC, and that's something that we shouldn't forget. That's really the core of our effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to touch base on two bills. So one, a slight correction of report. There's in bills we opposed, House Bill 2120. The way that the report written by Ms. Boehner suggests that I was working to defeat the bill that would allow the towns to have a seat. As a matter of fact, I made the motion to report that bill in subcommittee, which passed on a 5-1 vote. That's slightly different from working to oppose the bill. And what happened is, and what this bill would do, Mr. Chairman, if the chairman knows, is this would recognize the four super towns that we have in Northern Virginia, Leesburg, Dumfries, Deanna, and Herndon to have a rotating seat.
Percival's never going to forgive
you. Percival doesn't have a minimum size just yet, so those four. I'm sorry, maybe Percival wasn't included. They were. I stand corrected.
You're like, really, Randy? But, they're right over there.
Not my district, but Honduras for Deanna.
I remember that one, Randy.
But what's interesting, and I commend Doug King for this, he basically won in subcommittee. His bill was a strong 5-1 vote from the full committee. But a number of potential issues were brought to his attention that we probably should note here. One was bond counsel was scratching his head as to whether or not there would be a possible nonconformance with some of the indenture documents if we had a town, which is a part of a county, having double voting power in the algorithm that gives rise to our voting that we do here. That was a concern brought up. The last thing we want to do is to get bond counsel concerned. And so Delegate Keene decided to allow his own bill to be tabled, really at his request. And as the chair noted, that the chair would continue to work with town. So I just want to note that I wasn't really working to defeat that bill. I made a motion to report it. And secondly, there was some talk about the enactment clause that was put in the Metro Safety Commission bill. That gave me some consternation. The first version of that enactment clause put some very strong directives, called them mandates, for WMATA to engage in some institutional reform, to get their labor costs under control, and to work on revision to the WMATA compact that both sides of Potomac are asking to be done. That caused some consternation with the Department Secretary of Transportation. And so the final version was done is one that I think will empower not only NBTC, but also Secretary Lane's secretariat to carry the sword forward and allowing WMATA to get back on the track. So it's an uncodified enactment clause, but one I think that, I guess in an indirect way, it's gave rise to what happened today with Secretary LaHood being retained by our Commonwealth to do some work. So with that, I think it worked out well.
Anything else? Fantastic. Well, in fact, to that end, can we ask, I think we've asked this procedurally, since the individual who is referenced in the legislative report asked for the correction, can we get Tracy to make that up?
Absolutely.
For in the minutes?
Absolutely.
Other committees, Finance Technical Advisory, PCAC, any reports we need that aren't included in the packet?
No, they are in the packet.
All right. Anything else?
I just want to add that we are hosting the ITS Roundtable. It's our second annual one, planning for tomorrow's transportation today. That is Wednesday, April 5th, 8 to 10 a.m., and several of you authority members have registered to be in attendance, so we thank you and appreciate it, and the program is included in the report. Also, of your 79 approved projects, you have 14 projects that are closed out and off the authority's books. We also have an attachment of those projects included in the report, and that's all I have.
All right. Is there any other business to come before the authority tonight?
No, we have the motions on all those.
These are reports. Any other business to come before us this evening?
Just want to remind everyone, no April meeting. Your next meeting is May 11th.
Fantastic.